The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Road to More Growth. Synchrogistics President Erica Jackson has built the company from her garage into an $80 million enterprise. And this article is the Executive Voice Q&A column. Begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, She Sees a Road to More Growth Ahead. Jackson and her husband Bill moved from Greensboro to the Triangle to expand their firm. And this interview is by Lauren Onisorge. Synchrogistics started in a Greensboro garage. Today, it's on track for another $80 million year. Leading the charge is President Erica Jackson, an attorney who co-founded the analytics and technology-enabled logistics firm with her husband Bill in 2010. Bill Jackson, after consulting in the transportation space, sought to bring an analytics-focused approach to the sector. He quit his job to go all in while she kept working as an attorney to keep a steady paycheck. They bootstrapped the company and added their first employees within 3 years. The pair brought their now 40-person company to Raleigh in 2017, wooed by the talent pool. And Erica Jackson, who keeps a basketball in her office, had deep ties to the Triangle, with degrees from both Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill. On paper, the trajectory has been fast, from under $50 million to $81 million in 2022. But there are big challenges, including deflation in the shipping industry, where the cost of a shipment is significantly less than it was 18 months ago. But she sees hiring in the firm's future. Here, she addresses how the company, named among the fastest-growing private firms in the area last year by Triangle Business Journal, plans to keep building its team. Where do you see your company in 10 years? We see a long runway for growth so long as we stay focused on what differentiates us from our competition and remain adaptive to the environment and customers' needs. We're intentional in building a team that buys into the company's purpose and can mentor and develop future employees. What's been your biggest professional challenge and how did you overcome it? Learning the right balance in leading people. How do you set a high expectation culture that's also supportive and collaborative? It's an ongoing development. You never overcome it. You just get better at it. What's your biggest professional success? Scaling a team to quickly handle exponential growth post-COVID. What did you want to be when you grew up when you were 8 years old? A scientist. What's something that might surprise most colleagues about you? I love dancing. What's the biggest challenge in your industry in 2024? Uncertain economic environment. Your go-to place for a business lunch? Winston's. Favorite vacation spot? Anywhere without many people and a lot of nature to explore. Personal motto? Grit and perseverance. What's the best piece of advice you have ever received? You never know what someone is going through. Mark Townsend, colleague at VF Corporation. What book should every entrepreneur read? Smarter, Faster, Better by Charles Duhigg. And in a section with this article called A Closer Look, title President, Family, Husband, Bill, Sons, Liam, 14, Beck, 11, and Connor, 8, Education, BS, Chemistry and Economics, Duke University, JD, UNC Chapel Hill, Hometown, Franklinton, and First Job, Babysitting at 12, Consulting out of college. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Seaboard Cafe to end, long run. Years ago, the young Biz was living in a townhouse near North Hills and often ran into Rick Perales when Perales was out walking his corgi, Bud. Perales loved to cook and dreamed of opening a restaurant, so in 1991 he agreed to launch a restaurant inside the Seaboard train station, which was coming back to life as the new home of Logan's Garden Shop. Like so many new businesses, it took time for Seaboard Cafe to take off, but the Inside the Beltline crowd soon found that shopping for plants followed by a tasty sandwich and a friendly greeting from Perales was a terrific way to spend time. Business steadily grew, and the burgers, chicken salad, waffle fries, and pickled carrots made it a favorite for decades. An indication of the cafe's support came when a GoFundMe campaign raised more than $20,000 during the pandemic. Now, Logan's is moving to the State Farmers Market after this year, and Perales has decided to close September 28. Perales planned to close June 29, but Joshua Logan urged him to stay longer, and his six employees agreed to stay on. "I don't have any regrets. This whole thing has been a personal learning experience," Perales says. "I don't make that much money. It's the business I've really survived on." He notes that all the construction with Hoffman's Seaboard Station project has definitely had an impact, slashing revenue by 15 to 20%. "It's been a big burden," he says. "It's affected our business a lot." But Perales is also glad to see new businesses coming up in the area thriving. As for the Seaboard Cafe, Perales has no plans to start over and is ready to retire after many years of six-day weeks. "It's been a good run," he says. "I think it's time." VinFast is off to a slow start. Vietnamese electric automaker VinFast, which plans to build a plant in Chatham County, is posting some unimpressive financial numbers. In announcing its first quarter results April 17, the automaker stated it lost $618 million for the quarter, about 12% lower than the previous quarter. It also reported delivering only 9,689 vehicles, a 28% drop from the previous quarter. VinFast insists it will deliver 100,000 vehicles by the end of the year. National publication lauds Triangle Firm. A derm company has received some national recognition for its medical device. Fast Company included Hemosonics in its 2024 list of the 10 most innovative medical device companies. Hemosonics, according to the publication, had revenue growth of more than 50% in 2023 and received regulatory clearance last year to expand the use of its Quantra hemostasis system. Hemosonics, led by CEO Bob Rota, is focused on developing products around acute bleeding management. The company's flagship product uses novel ultrasound technology to quickly provide comprehensive whole blood coagulation analysis. Fast Company included more than 600 organizations in its compiling of the most innovative companies across dozens of sectors. NVIDIA, Novo Nordisk, and Microsoft topped the overall list. Red Hat ramps up in Israel. Red Hat is expanding, but not in Raleigh this time. The open-source software company, part of the IBM umbrella since 2019, opened a larger office in Israel this month. Red Hat has had an operation in Israel for a while, but recently opened the doors to a new space at 74,000 square feet. Its old office clocked in at about 44,000 square feet. According to Red Hat, more than 400 associates work out of the location. Chapel Hill named best place to move to in the state. The Triangle remains a popular destination for people who are looking to relocate, whether for work or quality of life, and two communities stand out in a recent study. An analysis by USA Today determined the best places to move to in North Carolina, and Chapel Hill is at the top of the list, with Cary coming in at number 5. But Raleigh is all the way down at number 19, while Durham ranks 11th, Apex is 9th, and Wake Forest is 10th. The study looked at 22 cities in the state using 17 metrics to rank communities on livability, health and safety, jobs and economy, and housing. Smaller communities on the edge of large metro areas fared best. Concord and Mooresville outside Charlotte also made the top 5, along with Burlington. Chapel Hill is the best city to live in due to economic factors, including low unemployment, 3.1%, and ample medical care providers, 21 primary care providers per 1,000 residents, USA Today says. Obviously, Cary has been growing at a rapid pace as millennials and baby boomers flock to the former bedroom community, but it's interesting to see Chapel Hill top the list, as the traditional college town is trying to remake its downtown into more of a hub for professionals. And finally, Baldwin decides not to run again. The city of Raleigh has been blessed through the years with terrific leadership, as people like Smedes York, Avery Upchurch, and Charles Meeker stepped into the mayor's chair at crucial times. And the stunning news April 18 that Mary Ann Baldwin will not seek re-election sets the stage for change when the city is looking to restore downtown and address housing, transportation, and police pay. Baldwin cited a variety of reasons, but primarily pointed to a battle with breast cancer that led her to reassess her role. Baldwin's sharp style has its detractors, but her tenure has been marked by growth and success despite the blow of the pandemic. And like the best of Raleigh's leaders, she brought a tireless devotion to the role and a determination to make Raleigh exceptional and inclusive. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Kaylee Thompson. Distributor breaks ground on new headquarters in Raleigh. A major wine and beer distributor is moving ahead with its new headquarters in Southeast Raleigh. Johnson Brothers Mutual Distributing broke ground recently on its new headquarters. The wine and beer distributor will be the anchor tenant in the latest industrial building in the Eagle Crest Industrial Park off Auburn Church Road near Garner. Johnson Brothers will occupy 420,000 square feet of the 625,000 square foot building. The space will be 100,000 square feet bigger than its current space on Capitol Boulevard, just inside the Beltline. The distributor is expanding as it has outgrown its current space and needs more room for inventory, according to a representative from Johnson Brothers Mutual Distributing. The company doesn't plan on hiring as part of the expansion. The building should be done in mid-2025, which will allow the distributor to install its material handling system and then move in early 2026. The remaining 200,000 square feet will be available for lease. The space is set up so that it could be for a single light industrial tenant or split for two tenants. The building has 40-foot clear heights, dock-high drive-in doors, and trailer parking. The distributor has been looking for a new building since 2022, citing population growth as the need to expand. This strategic location not only provides great proximity for our team members, but also positions us to serve our customers in the rapidly growing markets from the Triangle to the coast, says Scott Cash, general manager and vice president of Johnson Brothers Mutual. As the region continues to expand and evolve, our presence in this expanding market strengthens our current operations while setting the stage for future growth and success, he says. The Garner area has a popular location for industrial space. An 81,000 square foot industrial building is planned off Jones Sausage Road, and Greenberg Gibbons developed the Garner Commerce Park, which has 128,000 square feet of space. Johnson Brothers distributes all over North Carolina. It distributes wine brands such as Growth, Jam Cellars, and Biltmore, and cider and beer brands like 9/11, Recordelig, Saranac, Dirty Bull, Lucky Buddha, and Sullivan's Brewing. Former NBA star Rogers sues Blue Cross NC. Rogers, paralyzed in dirt bike accident, accuses BCBSNC of being reckless. And this article is written by Lauren Onasorge. Durham native and former NBA star Rodney Rogers has filed a lawsuit against Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, accusing the insurer of wrongly denying coverage for in-home nursing care, putting his life at risk. Rogers was born in Durham and starred at Hillside High School before going on to play at Wake Forest University, where he was named ACC Player of the Year and Second Team All-American in 1993. Nicknamed the Durham Bull, he was a top 10 pick in the 1993 NBA draft and had a 12-year career in the league that included stints with the Los Angeles Lakers, Boston Celtics, and Philadelphia 76ers. Rogers was NBA Sixth Man of the Year in 2000. But a dirt bike accident in Vance County in 2008 rendered him paralyzed from the neck down. The lawsuit against Blue Cross NC claims Rogers, 52, has been insured by the Durham company since 2014, yet only recently did the company decline coverage for in-home nursing services. That's as Rogers' condition, according to the complaint, has only gotten worse. This lapse in coverage has placed an enormous physical and emotional strain on my wife, who is not a specialized health care provider, and on me, Rogers said in a press release about the lawsuit. This denial of coverage is particularly frustrating since I have already had to confront the harsh reality of once being a professional athlete and then becoming a ventilator-dependent quadriplegic, and now I'm facing the possibility of even more dire health issues because of BCBSNC's health care denial. The lawsuit says Blue Cross NC's conduct towards Mr. Rogers constitutes reckless, outrageous, willful, and wanton conduct and is a misuse of its power and authority as an insurance company. In a statement, Blue Cross NC denied any wrongdoing and said, "Private duty nursing services are not intended to be provided on a permanent or ongoing basis." The company is represented by Chase Stevens of Kilpatrick, Townsend, and Stockton. The lawsuit was filed in Durham County in February and transferred to U.S. District this month. Rogers' attorney, Max Sasser, partner at Sasser Law, said it is rather astonishing that Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina would suddenly deny the very care they'd always provided when there was no improvement in his health. Without the in-home nursing care that's been provided to him for years, Mr. Rogers could die from a complication of his illness or a malfunction of his medical equipment, Sasser said. Kincell acquires manufacturing facility. Cell therapy firm adds capacity by getting RTP facility from Imugene. And this article is written by Zach Ezone. A company that spun off from a Morrisville biotech last year has strengthened its local ties with the recent acquisition of a manufacturing facility. Kincell Bio has acquired a 32,800-square-foot facility in Research Triangle Park as part of a deal with Imugene Limited, an Australian drug development company. The addition of the facility expands Kincell's capacity to work with more companies as a contract development and manufacturing organization, or CDMO, focused on cell therapies. Kincell acquired the facility from Imugene for up to $6 million in upfront and milestone-driven payments over 3 years. The deal includes both the facility and its employees, although the companies declined to disclose how many people this includes. Kincell launched last year with $36 million after spinning out of Inceptor Bio, a cell therapy biotech based in Morrisville. Kineticos Life Sciences, a Raleigh-based venture capital firm, is a lead investor in both Kincell and Inceptor. The CDMO formed around a 29,000-square-foot manufacturing facility in Florida that Inceptor acquired a few years earlier. Acquiring Imugene's facility in RTP enables Kincell to expand its capabilities to work with companies as they advance their cell therapy programs into mid- and late-stage studies, says Kincell CEO Bruce Thompson. This is the second time the facility on TW Alexander Drive has exchanged hands in the past year. Imugene in August acquired the facility from Precision Biosciences in a deal that also included the global rights to Precision's lead cell therapy asset, AzerCell. Imugene paid the Durham-based company $21 million upfront in cash and equity for the assets. Fuquay to get first new hotel in decades. This article is written by David Pertell. The fast-growing town of Fuquay Varina in Wake County is getting a new hotel, a rarity for the area. The town has announced plans for a True by Hilton hotel in a mixed-use development called Bangle Town Center, which includes commercial and residential components. The site is off Judd Parkway, north of Main Street. The new hotel will feature 91 rooms and total 55,000 square feet. The project is led by Fuquay Varina Ventures, LLC, developer Clarendon Properties, and Crown Hotel and Travel Management, according to the town. Hotels are few and far between in Fuquay Varina. Despite the area's rapid growth in recent years, the town's core has just two chain hotels, a Quality Inn and a Comfort Inn and Suites. Property records show those hotels were built in the 1990s. Meanwhile, Fuquay Varina's population has ballooned from under 20,000 in 2010 to above 43,000 today. The town approved local incentives for the hotel project this month. The developer is eligible to receive up to $350,000 of economic development funding assistance in return for $14 million in new capital investment and creating 13 full-time jobs. Fuquay Varina has been on our development target list for some time, said Barry Eagle, president and CEO of Crown Hotel and Travel Management. The growth in this area is undeniable, and being a partner with Hilton to bring one of the fastest-growing brands in the country to the market is so exciting. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on tech and finance. Luxury brand chose Raleigh over Charlotte. Swiss watchmaker will put 100-job facility here. Before deciding on Raleigh for its new U.S. operation, a luxury watchmaker based in Switzerland had considered Charlotte, according to documents that were recently made public. Audemars Piguet, which only produces 40,000 watches per year, last year committed to creating 105 jobs and investing $22 million in Raleigh. But it wasn't a simple pick. It took 5 visits to the state for the company to make a decision, records show. The project was known internally as Project Beyond. The company did not return requests to comment further on its plans for Raleigh, but documents made available by the North Carolina Department of Commerce show the company met with the mayors of both Charlotte and Raleigh before picking the Raleigh Ironworks development for a 60,000 square foot service center. Internal emails refer to an aggressive Charlotte offer, one that was met with even more requests by the watchmaker. A memo from August 30 shows layered incentives negotiations as the watchmaker asked both Wake and Mecklenburg counties to increase their offers. The company asked Wake County to increase its support and at the same time for Mecklenburg to match the city of Charlotte's more aggressive incentive terms. But neither request could be met. Mecklenburg said it couldn't match Charlotte's offer for multiple reasons, including their higher tax rate, as well as a lack of clarity on project economic impact. Raleigh was announced as the project location in December. According to a briefing memo from August, the plan was to relocate a maintenance, customization, and repair operation, but many of the hires, about 50, would be watchmakers relocating from other locations. The plan would be to hire upward of 40 more, the company said in filings. Bank puts branch next to Kerry Wegmans. United Community Bank is finalizing plans for a new branch near the Kerry Wegman store and is ready to move dirt. A spokesperson for the bank, which bought the half-acre property in 2021 for $1.5 million, says construction is scheduled to begin soon, with an opening date anticipated early 2025. The property is off Davis Drive, north of Morrisville Carpenter Road. The plan has been years in the making for the retail bank, which also touts its SBA lending franchise and equipment financing subsidiary. A site plan filed last year for United Community Bank Twin Lakes at 1105 Hatches Pond Lane shows a building with a drive-through and an ATM. The bank entered the triangle through its buy of Four Oaks FinCorp and has grown to house nearly $103.6 million in deposits in the Raleigh Metro as of last year, according to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Consolidation heats up in banking scene. The latest banking deal in a year that analysts say could be marked by consolidation is complete, that of Providence Bank of Rocky Mount and Coastal Bank and Trust in Jacksonville. The move creates a community bank with about $1.2 billion in assets. Based on financials from the end of 2023, the combined bank has about $996.6 million in loans and deposits of $1 billion. Providence CEO Ted Whitehurst said last month that his bank's buyout of Coastal, announced last August, was imminent. It could be a sign of additional consolidation to come, as scale matters more than ever in a world where regulatory scrutiny and technology investments can get expensive for small banks. Greg McBride, an analyst with Bankrate.com, says the slight uptick in M&A already happening in 2024 is the product of an improving outlook, even with still high interest rates. There's a lot less angst than there was last year following the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, he says. And it's only a matter of time before more deals are announced. The outlook is a lot brighter now, so this is an environment where you start to see deals happen again and the economy continues to do well, McBride says. And finally, ex-Wolfspeed unit keeps innovating. As Wolfspeed builds a new factory in Chatham County, the LED business it left behind continues to innovate. Wolfspeed, then Cree, announced plans in 2020 to divest its LED product segment to Smart Global Holdings to focus on semiconductors. Joe Clark, president of Cree LED at Smart Global Holdings, says it has had major benefits for the LED unit, too. He says Cree LED has accelerated under its new owner. Cree LED continues to push out new LED products and has about 1,300 employees, including 216 in Durham. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page written by Zach Ezone. Fujifilm plans $1.2 billion expansion in Triangle. Holly Springs plant that is coming online will be much larger. To further draw upon a strong local workforce and its existing operations, Fujifilm Diasynth Biotechnologies has chosen North Carolina for a $1.2 billion expansion. In 2023, Fujifilm Diasynth began a worldwide search for a massive expansion to meet the needs of the large pharmaceutical companies it serves. The company, part of Japan's Fujifilm Corporation, last year narrowed down its options to various sites in Singapore or near existing facilities in Denmark, California, and Holly Springs. Fujifilm Diosynth on April 11 announced it had decided to expand the facility under construction in Holly Springs. "It wasn't a difficult decision to make," says CEO Lars Peterson. Project documents cite a proximity to skilled labor markets, local educational institutions, and the ability for the location's ability to enhance the company's market reach, proximity to patients, and supply chain resilience. Local and state incentives also played a role, as did Fujifilm's ability to leverage its existing facilities. Fujifilm Diosynth in 2021 began building out a $2 billion manufacturing facility in Holly Springs that is on track to be operational next year. By expanding, Fujifilm can utilize the same construction operations and other resources. "We ended up finding this is the best fit for our business right now," Peterson says. "We would not be able to put up this type of capacity elsewhere without building a new site." Fujifilm Diosynth operates as a contract development and manufacturing organization, or CDMO, working with pharma and biotech companies to produce biologics, vaccines, and other advanced therapies. This expansion will add about 425,000 square feet to the Holly Springs facility, bringing the total size to around 1.3 million square feet. The company is also adding 8 20,000-liter bioreactors to an already planned 8 bioreactors for the site. The capacity makes it one of the largest cell culture biopharmaceutical facilities in North America. The first phase of this facility is set to be operational in 2025, with the expansion coming online in the first quarter 2028. RTP firm facing cash crunch sells assets. After selling off 2 commercial products, a Research Triangle Park biotech has a deal to sell more assets. Ginkgo Bioworks of Boston has acquired the platform assets of AgBiome, including a massive microbial strain library, millions of unique gene sequences, and AgBiome's development pipeline focused on agriculture. Financial details were not disclosed. Ginkgo plans to integrate the assets into Ginkgo Ag Biological Services, which it established with its acquisition of a California research and development facility from Bayer in 2022. Combining these assets creates one of the deepest and most advanced ag biological discovery and development platforms, Ginkgo said April 11th. The deal follows AgBiome in March confirming the sale of its 2 lead commercial products, fungicides called Howler and Thea, to Certis Biologicals of Maryland. And finally, Chapel Hill medical firm bought out. A medical device company that had huge, big plans in North Carolina has finalized a merger that ends a year-long strategic review process. Titan Medical in 2020 set up operations in Chapel Hill to support its development of a robotic surgical system called Enos. But by the end of 2022, Titan, short on cash, began a strategic review process to find a potential path forward. This process, during which the company laid off nearly 50 employees in Chapel Hill, is now complete. Titan in March entered an agreement to combine with the Canadian firm Canavi Medical in an all-stock transaction that functions as a reverse takeover, giving Canavi access to the public capital markets. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page on Greater Triangle Growth. Want to buy a zoo? Now is your chance. Zoo with tigers, giraffes goes up for sale for $5 million. For anyone who loves animals or real estate investments, a zoo in a hot North Carolina county could be yours if you have a few million dollars to spend. Aloha Safari Park in Harnett County, which has a Cameron address at 159 Minnie Lane, is up for sale by owner Scotty Brown, who is an Iredell County Commissioner. The property covers roughly 66 acres, and the sale will include the more than 300 animal species in the zoo, the gift shop, inventory, and staff residences on the property, according to Parker. The listed price is $5 million. Since the zoo hit the market, new inquiries are coming in by the hour. According to Billy Parker, a land broker with National Land Realty, a South Carolina real estate agency with an office in Raleigh, Parker says inquiries have come from a mix of individuals, including real estate investors, zoo experts, and people who are passionate about animals. Parker says this is his first time handling a zoo listing and that it should make for an attractive investment because history tells us that the public will always be fascinated by exotic animals, he says. He does not disclose the zoo's revenue in 2023. The zoo has been in operation since 2010. An LLC tied to Brown purchased the property in 2022 for under $760,000, according to Harnett County deed records. That price did not include the animals, according to Parker. Parker says that Brown is a good guy who really cares about animals in the community and that he is looking to retire. Nothing is going to be done in a quick hurry where it jeopardizes any humans or animals, Parker says. This is going to be a process. He's looking at retiring and wants to pass the torch and ensure the zoo is in good hands. Brown is also selling the 186-acre Zootastic Park of Lake Norman in Troutman in Iredell County for $16 million, according to Parker. NC-42 to get wider in Key Clayton Stretch. A key highway that Johnston County leaders have labeled a critical corridor for growth will be widened to support higher traffic volumes and open the area to more development. NC Highway 42, which stretches across the northern part of Johnston County and through Clayton, is slated to be widened between NC Highway 50 and U.S. Highway 70, starting at the end of this decade, according to Russell Broadwell, a project engineer with the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The project will make this portion of Highway 42 a four-lane road divided by a median. The area around where NC 42 meets Interstate 40 has piqued developers' interest ever since I-40 opened all the way to Wilmington in 1990. In recent years, the Clayton area has been surging with growth, fueled by a boom in residential development. And finally, investor buys land along the Cape Fear River. A Delaware LLC scooped up a large property zoned for housing along the Cape Fear River in a Red Hat County. Shroot Farms LLC, which has a Dover, Delaware address, bought two vacant parcels with Fuquay Varina addresses that total more than 186 acres for $1.5 million recently, according to Harnett County deed records. The land sits off Tyler DeWar Lane and River Road, right by the Cape Fear River. The ownership behind Shroot Farms LLC is unclear. There is a Shroot Farms LLC registered in North Carolina and based in Goldsboro, but one of the members of that LLC, Realtor Scott Walker, told Triangle Business Journal in an email, "Wish that was us, but we don't have anything in Cape Fear." And our last reporter page is Kaylee Thompson's on real estate. Dallas firm pours $11 million into Grove 98 project. Wegmans anchors shopping center with Torchy's Tacos. A Dallas company spent more than $11 million on two retail buildings within a new mixed-use development in Wake Forest. Investment company L&B Realty Advisors acquired 505 and 515 Dr. Calvin Jones Highway at the Wegmans-anchored Grove 98 development for $11.5 million, according to Wake County deed records. The buildings hold retailers including Torchy's Tacos, Cava, and Nothing Bundt Cakes, all of which opened in the last year as part of Grove 98's first phase. Other retailers are Sleep Number, Deca Dental, and One Medical. The properties are 100% occupied. L&B Realty Advisors declines to comment on the sale. The Stiles Corporation is behind the development of Grove 98 and sold the properties to L&B. The properties total 2 acres and have an assessed value of about $3.6 million. The two buildings have 17,144 square feet of retail space. The second phase of the 78-acre mixed-use development is fully pre-leased and should deliver this spring. Tenants set to open in the second phase are Amazing Lash Studio, BB Bop Asian Grill, Piata Italian Street Food, Dave's Hot Chicken, VO Med Spa, The Now Massage Boutique, Urgent Vet, Grove 98 Nails and Spa, and an unnamed fitness retailer. Developments anchored by Wegmans and the Triangle continue to perform well. The New York-based grocery chain has 4 stores in the region. The others are in Raleigh, Cary, and Chapel Hill. A fifth could come to Holly Springs. Retailers are flocking to Wake Forest as that part of Wake County continues to fill in with residential developments. The population of Wake Forest is now above 51,000. The housing market in northeast Wake County is booming. New homes in the Preserve at Kitchen Farms have an average list price of $443,882, according to Stacy Anfinson's TARR report. And new homes in Wexford Reserve have an average list price of $1.47 million. New Durham apartments put hefty emphasis on affordability. A developer wants to fill a hole in the apartment supply by offering smaller units at lower rents. Ernest Brown, owner of EB Capital Partners, has submitted site plans for 200 units in South Durham near Interstate 40 and several shops and restaurants. Brown said that after noticing there weren't very many smaller one bedrooms in an affordable price range, he decided to create a community that met that need. Of the 200 units at Carpenter Fletcher Road, 92% will be one bedrooms, with the remaining being two bedrooms. The development also will have 27 units offered at 60% of the area median income. Brown said he is aiming to offer the one bedroom units for around $1,200 a month. He said the rough estimate right now for the average size of a one-bedroom unit is 700 square feet. And finally, shared warehousing venture grows. A year after launching, a company that deals in co-warehousing is about to open its second building in Raleigh and is looking for two more. Jason Wyden, founder of Blue Company Warehousing, says the second building will open by May with the goal of acquiring a third building and opening it by the end of the year. The fourth building would come along sometime in 2025. The second building is right across from the first in West Raleigh, 510 and 517 Pylon Drive, just outside the Beltline near J.C. Ralston Arboretum. Between the two buildings, which Blue Company is leasing, there is almost 60,000 square feet of warehouse and office space. The first building is full, and the second, although not open yet, is almost full. Demand for shared warehouse space for companies who need less than 2,000 square feet is high. The warehouse vacancy rate in the Triangle was 4.89% in fourth quarter 2023, down from 5.74% the quarter prior. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline: Built for Rent Homes Changing Housing Equation. On April 16, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development released its monthly housing numbers, which showed that housing starts in the U.S. are dropping at an alarming rate. Overall, housing starts fell 14.7% in March to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.32 million units. Single-family permits decreased 5.7% to 973,000 units. Typically, the number of starts denotes the number of housing units to be constructed if development keeps pace for the next 12 months. These numbers do not bode well for home prices coming down in the short run. As I've noted previously in my columns, the financial stress caused by inflation, decreasing value of the earned money, on wage earners nearing retirement keeps millions of baby boomers from planning to sell their homes and move to the coast, mountains, or even abroad. So if the number of existing homes is not back to pre-pandemic levels and home builders are slowing down and starting to build new homes, prices are going to rise further, especially for high-growth areas such as the Triangle, where new people are moving in every day. But there's another piece of the housing puzzle likely to make things even more complicated for folks in the Triangle and most of the nation: the increase in built-for-rent homes. Home builders make money by constructing new homes and then selling them. If the number of potential home buyers drops precipitously because of a stubborn interest rate environment, home builders cannot just stop working and watch Netflix all day. They resort to the next best thing, built-for-rent, or BFRs. According to the National Association for Realtors, the percentage of BFRs to total housing starts jumped from 5% in 2021 to 8% in 2022. When the quarterly U.S. Census Bureau numbers on construction are released for 2023, the number is expected to be 10% or higher. Putting a new house up for rent buys investors time. While it holds the capital hostage, there is a cash flow to service the debt until the interest rate environment improves. But it may take a while. For example, according to Wake County tax data, during first quarter 2022, the median price for lot sales averaged $56,900. only 11% of the median sale price of a home. By first quarter 2024, however, Wake County median lot prices had skyrocketed to $93,436, accounting for almost 25% of the median sales price of a Wake County home. The math supports builders constructing more built-for-rent homes for now. If baby boomers finally start selling their homes and interest rates start coming down, those same single-family rental units are likely to be put up for sale in the secondary market. For now, however, remember when we talked about private investment firms competing with individual buyers for properties with all-cash deals at a premium price, thereby shutting out individual buyers? That is happening less and less. Investment firms are buying fewer and fewer homes in Wake County. In first quarter 2024, investment entities bought only 1,275 single-family properties. In the June quarter of 2022, they bought 2,935 units. So there is that for the individual buyer who wants to live in a house. BFRs, for the most part, are changing the housing equation and will continue to do so if the supply of homes for sale in the Triangle hovers around a 1 or 2 month supply. An optimal housing market should be near a 6 month supply. You get the picture. And also on the Viewpoint page, we have a guest column written by Sally Hodges Koppel, who is a public policy analyst with the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center in Raleigh. The headline, Using the Power of Refundable Child Tax Credit. In 14 states across the country, legislatures have adopted child tax credits that reduce child poverty, improve well-being, and make state tax codes fair. North Carolina should follow suit. Legislative leaders in the General Assembly should implement a bold, fully refundable child tax credit, or CTC, for low and moderate income families choosing the well-being of children and communities over policies that tilt our tax code in favor of large corporations and the wealthy few. Here are just a few of the benefits North Carolinians can expect from a bold state CTC. Nearly 1 in 5 children live below the poverty line in North Carolina. That's less than $29,950 a year for a family of four. CTCs are a proven poverty-busting tool. In 2021, the temporary expansion of the federal CTC slashed child poverty in our state by more than 40%. A bold state CTC for low and moderate income North Carolinians, one that provides $1,900 for kids under 6 and $1,600 for older children, would reduce child poverty by nearly one-third, lifting over 100,000 North Carolina children above the poverty line. The benefits of a CTC go beyond poverty reduction. A sizable body of research on tax credits for low and moderate income families has found that these policies are linked to improved infant and maternal health, and that children see better school performance, increased college enrollment, and greater lifetime earnings. These outcomes are unsurprising. Households experiencing low incomes know best what their families need and spend the bulk of CTC income on basic necessities and child-related spending, such as housing, food, child care, and school supplies. North Carolina's tax code is upside down, meaning that people with the lowest incomes pay the highest share of their income in state and local taxes. North Carolina families with incomes below $22,000 pay almost 11% of their income in state and local taxes, while the richest 1% of households pay just 6%. In other words, North Carolinians' incomes are more unequal after state and local taxes are collected than before. A refundable CTC would provide a much-needed corrective to our tax code by putting dollars back in the pockets of regular families, families working in undercompensated but essential professions in healthcare, manufacturing, retail, and education. A fully refundable state CTC is a powerful, common-sense investment in children and families that North Carolina can afford to make. It would cost the state a little over $2 billion each year to establish a CTC capable of reducing child poverty by almost one-third. By comparison, the scheduled elimination of the corporate income tax and continued reductions in the personal income tax rate will mean a loss of $13 billion, plus in public money per year when fully enacted. Tax cuts for the wealthy have failed to deliver on promised benefits for regular North Carolina families. It is past time for legislative leaders in the General Assembly to choose communities over corporations. A fully refundable state CTC will help families afford the basics, boost local economies, and slash child poverty levels across the state, with benefits felt in our communities for years to come. And now we'll read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. Only a few of them this edition. The first one, $29.5 million. That's the projected cost associated with Raleigh Radiology's plans to acquire a new magnetic resonance imaging scanner for its Knightdale Center. Regulators in March issued it a certificate of need, allowing the practice to acquire the equipment. The practice beat out Duke Health and Wake Radiology. 750. The maximum amount of homes Pulte Group of Atlanta is planning to build in a new residential subdivision in Clayton, targeted for those aged 55 and older. And finally, $2 million. That's how much Apollo Global Management paid for 12 acres to expand its Catalyst BioCampus Life Sciences campus in Holly Springs, according to Wake County deed records. Apollo Global Management and Gene Suites jointly own Catalyst BioCampus. And now we'll read the quotable sections that are also sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal, only a few this week. The first one is from Himanshu Shah, president of Shah Capital, on the need for changes at the struggling vaccine developer Novavax. We have made multiple pragmatic suggestions which would improve the management of the company, significantly increasing shareholder value. However, you have failed to act. And next is Chris Kirk, a broker on Property Resources acquiring a strip mall in New Bern. In New Bern, like a lot of the coastal markets, they're getting a lot of retirees and people moving from other states because it's a much, much cheaper cost of living. And finally, a quote from Kamari Ankenbrand, managing director of JLL. Even if a new building were to break ground in the next couple of months, the rental rate that they're going to have to ask to make those numbers work is well beyond where we are today. And now we turn to the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, The Latino Influence. The headline, Cultural Fusion Grocer. The current generation of El Mandado is attracting a broader customer base and is on pace for $12 million in sales. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52 Shades of Success, The Latino Influence, explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by those in the Latin American community from all across the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. This 52-week project will also dive into important trends and issues relating to the DEI sector. And El Mandado is spelled E-L and M-A-N-D-A-D-O. Siblings Carla Brantner and Marco Roldan watch their parents, Anna and Marco Roldan Sr., build the thriving El Mandado supermarket at a time when the Triangle needed Hispanic grocery stores to serve what was then a relatively small Hispanic community. They started in 1989 as a mobile grocer with $200 in classic Hispanic products, mostly dry goods, sold from the back of a van. By the year 2000, they had expanded across brick-and-mortar stores from their initial 700-square-foot location off Atlantic Avenue that was comparable to one short grocery aisle to an expansive 37,000-square-foot superstore on Capitol Boulevard in North Raleigh. Brantner and her brother came to Raleigh at ages 12 and 10, respectively, when their parents moved from Guatemala. While admiration for what their parents accomplished is palpable when they talk about those early years, neither of them ever intended to work in the family store. But when their father died in 2015, they stepped in to help their mother. Roldan, a professional photographer, returned to Raleigh that year from Pennsylvania, where he was working with advertising agencies after an early career in photojournalism in California. He expected to spend a couple of years getting things in order, then resume his photography and branding profession. We had no interest in working in the store at all, says Brantner, who graduated from NC State University with a computer science degree and worked for 20 years as a software engineer at IBM. About 2016, I decided I needed a break from corporate America, so I asked Mom if I could work part-time, thinking I'd go back to the corporate job at some point. Instead, she and her brother began to envision what El Mandado should become. With zero experience in retailing or the food industry, they have successfully transitioned the traditional Hispanic supermarket into a hybrid model that is on track to pass $12 million in sales this year. Step one was relocating about a mile up the road to a newer shopping center where they could create a more modern, higher-end aesthetic that would position their supermarket on the same level as the large national and regional chains selling traditional American fare. The other place was bigger, but we were having a lot of problems structurally. It was old and needed to be updated, Roldan says. It was almost as expensive to renovate there as it was to build new in this location, which had been a Staples, not a grocery store, Brantner adds. Downsized to a 27,000 square foot space, but with expanded product lines to include more Latin American selections, as well as a wider breadth of American brands, El Mandado is now seizing the opportunity to attract a broader clientele. We want to attract not just Hispanics, but also locals, the African American market, and other ethnic communities, she says. They estimate over 60% of their customer base is Mexican, but see the demographics evolving with the neighborhood and with the increased interest in Hispanic foods. The 2022 Food Trend Forecast from Data Essential reported that 45% of Gen Zs said if they could eat only one kind of food for the rest of their life, they would choose Mexican cuisine. The focus of the El Mandado reinvention is reading and responding to the market that exists now, as well as preparing for one that will emerge in the coming years. Generationally, younger Hispanic shoppers and those who are more acculturated to America are inclined to want American brands as well as Hispanic brands, so the hybrid model is their ideal fit. Best-selling products are limes, tomatoes, plantains, and tortillas, and Coca-Cola, Roldan adds. Both the produce and the meat market tend to attract restaurants and food trucks as frequent shoppers. And on the weekends, they see multi-generational Hispanic families eating at the El Mandado Taqueria inside the store before making shopping a family event. In its report on the rise of the Hispanic grocery, global consultancy LEK states, recent first-generation immigrants have different grocery needs and wants than, say, third-generation American-born Hispanics. That said, much of the cultural preferences and shopping behaviors remain sticky across acculturated Hispanic consumers due to their tendency to live in multi-generational households and shop as a family. The report also notes that 26% of Hispanics live in multi-generational households versus 13% of non-Hispanic whites who live in multi-generational households. Our largest customer base is Mexican. Central Americans are in second, followed by Caribbean Islanders and South Americans. And the number of American customers are growing every year, Roldan says. As for the hybrid inventory mix, Brantner says there are tens of thousands of SKUs, and the store carries a variety of some 8,000 products. About 60% of those products are international, and 40% are American brands. Initially, they focused on the store's infrastructure and design, repositioning inventory they felt disorganized across the larger footprint, which included more warehouse space than in the new store. Instead of overstocking SKUs or losing track of inventory on hand in the warehouse area, they now rely on their point-of-sale system for inventory management. Aisle shelves are always filled and replenishment stock is efficiently held on the top shelf above the selling space. This extra layer of shelving was added in November when a store reset also introduced roughly 1,000 new products. We were very specific with the reset. We don't want to take out any product. We are not reducing Latin American product. If anything, we're adding more. We just wanted to grow the American side, and that's why we did more shelving, Brantner says. From over-the-counter pharmaceuticals to the health and beauty section to cookies and snacks, every shelf is filled with brands instantly recognizable from LATAM countries as well as those in the U.S. This hybrid mix provides Hispanic shoppers with a sense of cultural continuity and comfort while also giving shoppers the same options they would find at traditional American grocers. The differences in the siblings' professional backgrounds has perhaps proved more beneficial than if they were coming from prior retail management. Brantner's analytical mindset is focused on day-to-day management, administrative details like payroll and department leadership. Roldan's creative and advertising expertise syncs with the marketing, branding, and social media aspects. But the big decisions are handled together, like their current focus on human resources, where they are adding a bonus plan, health care benefits, and 401k options. We're focusing on our staff, on training and retaining staff, and on the culture of the company, which is meshing together both the American culture and the Latin American culture, taking the best of both worlds. My sister and I are both very Americanized, but we have very much the Latin American in us, he says. They have contemplated opening a second location or possibly franchising, but for now, the goal is to continue to tweak and perfect the El Mandado hybrid model, implementing changes that elevate the selection, presentation, and overall shopping experience in their North Raleigh store, from black plastic containers to fully transparent clear units for a better display of fresh foods. We're trying to mature the way we run the business, make sure everything is consistent here before we think about a second location, Brantner says. Another area they want to address is empowering department managers to become more involved in business decisions and understand profit and loss on a day-to-day basis. We were rolling it out with one department and it has already motivated them. In just 2 months, they are running it so much differently that sales went up $7,000 in a month, she says. And in news around the state, Elon launches $25 million campaign for new building. This is from the Triad Business Journal. Elon University wants its community to know that health is more than just exercise, so much so that it will construct a 135,000-square-foot health center at a cost of more than $25 million. When it opens in 2026, the Health EU Center will become the second largest building on the university's campus behind the Shar Center, Elon's multipurpose arena. The three-story facility will house academic spaces as well as recreation, counseling, health and well-being offerings. We understand that health and well-being are critical to the success not just of our students, but also our faculty and staff, Elon President Connie Ledoux Book says. This multifaceted facility will provide a wide range of support to our community and offer opportunities to connect with each other and with resources that support their growth and development. To help fund the new facility, Elon University has launched a $25 million campaign. Owen Covington, a spokesperson for the university, says the $25 million goal will not cover the entire cost of the project and declined to give an estimated total cost. And we'll end with the Business Pulse survey. The question this week: how far will the Carolina Hurricanes go in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Total number of responses, 262. 59% say this is the year they win it. 18% say we will reach the finals. 13% say we'll lose in the conference finals. And 10% say we won't make a deep playoff run. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.